Hello, welcome again to another episode of the Challenger Cities podcast. I'm with me, Ian Montgomery. And this episode's great because if you follow along with some of the things we write, as well as the audio stuff, I've wrote a thing about, here's like 10 cities that I think are really some of the next upcoming Challenger Cities at the moment. Not the usual suspects that you see, Amsterdam, Copenhagen, Paris, whatever. Anyway, one of them was Mexico City. And I actually don't know how I came across Guillermo Bernal, who is the executive director of the Place Institute. He's really like the guy in Mexico City when it comes to placemaking. I went, do you want to be on my podcast? And he went, yeah, I do want to be on your podcast. So we literally only properly chatted 10 minutes before we hit the record button here. So it's very unscripted, like most of these things really are. And we'll talk about placemaking, we'll talk about his background, we'll talk about why Mexico is really quite special for that at the moment, the lessons that it can have to take to the rest of the world, the lessons that it's taking from the rest of the world without just sort of copying and pasting the playbook. We'll make lots of food analogies. At the end of this, you might be hungry for a taco or a beef Wellington. And yeah, I think you're just going to really enjoy this one because we're breaking out of that mold where we spend a lot of time talking in North America, in Europe, in the UK. So here we go. Here is a conversation with Guillermo Bernal. So, Guillermo, it's great to like do this recording with you because I only actually met you properly 10 minutes ago after connecting on like LinkedIn and over email. But I really, really wanted to talk to you because I wrote a little list of, I think these are some of the up-and-coming best examples of Challenger Cities, and one of them was Mexico City. And I think like lots of people have traveled to Mexico City in recent years. It's become a hot attraction for tourists, and everybody I know who goes there comes back and goes, oh my god, that was so good, I didn't expect it to be so good, but I really enjoyed my time there. So when I was looking, going, who's the best person to talk to on this podcast about Mexico City, I found you, and I was like, all right, yeah, we need to have a conversation. But I don't like to ruin people's introductions, so let's get into this with
No, thank you. I mean, I'm really thankful for what you said. Like, I feel honored to be here. I know we haven't met in person, but I have listened in your podcast, and it kind of feels like you know each other, you know? It's like when you read a book or you see someone else in a movie, or like we speak like in Zoom, then it just needs the last part of it, like when we meet in person. But thank you for having me here, and I'm happy to speak to whoever and everyone who's listening to me.
So, like, to get into this, like, let's do a little sort of quick background to you, Guillermo, some of your work and how you got into placemaking, and because you do lots of projects. How did you get there, and what does day to day life look like for you?
So I study political science here in Mexico City as my background, and I started working for the Mexico City Chamber of Deputies, and I was in the intern, and then I started working with them. And then that's where I realized that policy and changes are made through actual change. And then my passion continued about cities and about change and about people and about how actually make things happen. And that's where I did my studies in Europe, in several universities over there. And I became someone who likes cities, who lives cities, who have lived in six cities in my life, and now I'm back to Mexico City, my hometown, and for the last 10 years, and I've been working like all over the country with our nonprofit and with my partner, my business partner, and my love partner everywhere in the city. So it's like and the country. So yeah, that's me, and thank you for having me here. And
so like, the thing that you're kind of known for is like placemaking. And that is a term where like, I feel like some people love that term. Some people kind of, I've like been in meetings and people go, oh, I don't like that term. But what does placemaking mean to you?
You know, placemaking could be a buzzword, could be a terminology that explains a technique, a specific technique. That there's a book, if you want to look for it, it's called How to Turn a Place Around, right, by Katie Madden and Fred Kent, where they speak the 11 principles of placemaking, and there's some tools about placemaking. So it could be rather a philosophy, it could be also a specific methodology to implement public spaces. But at the end, it's not a trademark word. So I've seen it in hundreds of conferences. I use it in the wrong way, according to the book. I also seen it, and I'm speaking in English-speaking context. But what is beautiful about placemaking is when it goes global, then it means much less than it means to a native English speaking person. No, it's like maybe they have never listened to it. Maybe they will actually never listen to it when we are doing placemaking work. So it's about having principles about public space. It's about understanding people center and then the decision-making process of rather than design, it's about creating a place for people. So in my mind, it's about two main components. The place, that it's the actual construction of a real place in terms of. And we say it like that, like it's like imagine an architect. I know you have a lot of architects, and architects build houses, but actually a real and in my mind, a good architect is someone that builds homes, someone that respects the family, the people who's gonna live there, the neighbors, the context around their construction. That's for me a great architect. A great architect is not just a beautiful house, but it's a place where you want to be there, where you want to live, where you want to. And you know easily and very fast if it's a nice home or it's a bad home. It could be a beautiful design house, beautiful colors, beautiful lighting. But if you open your book that you want to read, that you can read it because they never understood that about lighting and about sound and about wind and about everything around the construction. That's maybe not a great home. It was a great house, but not a great home. And the same with place. It's a great public space. It's not the most beautiful one. It's not the one. It's like just constructed with the best infrastructure. It's the one to actually respond to people, to respond to context, to respond to the users, to respond, and that evolves also. The same as a home and a family evolves, community and cities evolve, and a great public space where it comes a place is the one who responds great to the community. So that's the first part of placemaking, and the other one is the making part. So it's not about thinking, it's not about dreaming, it's not about planning, it's not about drawing cities, it's about making cities. So it's the process of making great places. And that's basically placemaking. And it's not about painting murals. It's not about colorful sidewalks. That's the making part of the cities. But if you're not making a place, even it's nice or beautiful, do not necessarily means it's a real placemaking process. So that's where the empowerment and the community and the city and the power of placemaking. So I'm known for this because I've been doing this for more than 10 years in Latin America, Mexico, and some communities in the Spanish-speaking communities in the US, but also globally in the last couple of years. Yeah, that's my passion, to empower people.
There's something amazing, and I notice this when I travel in like Europe as well as going to Mexico. But there's like an Anglo version of place that is often very, I don't want to use the word sterile, but it feels a little bit soulless. So it first hit me like really hard a few years ago when I was in Armenia and I was in Yerevan. And it's not the wealthiest of cities, it's not the biggest of cities, but like on an October evening when it's kind of warm out, you basically had like the whole city treating the city like its living room. So in the main square, you had people looking at like some of the art. You had kids playing around in the street. You had people selling things. You had people performing. But it meant that like I could be there on my own, not necessarily have anything specific to do. But I felt like the time flew by just being in that place. And I can think of other places around the world where that stick in my head as you have these public spaces and they're almost treated like living rooms. And as a tourist, you can be welcome there even though that you might only be passing through for a day or two. But in some ways, they're designed to be like that. And in some ways, it's ingrained in the culture. And in some way, things that might annoy certain people are just tolerated because they give other people some joy to it. And I think like that's the there's an Anglo version of the world that would try and design that perfectly, and then they wouldn't get the outcome that they get. And then there's different cultures that are kind of, and I can't put my finger on what creates it behind the scenes. But I think they're just so amazing at making those places that they're really vibrant for sort of culture, social, and then like economic purposes. Like that's there's a magic to that. And I think there's a lot of people that are like, I want that, but how do I create that at home? So you've done that a lot.
I mean, I think it's like going deep down our human perspective of how what we are as human and how we interact with people in our cities. And obviously there is this sterile, perfectly built public spaces, and there is this need of this great construction of place everywhere. And this is like, I've seen shopping malls, horrible and bad shopping malls, and this globalization of culture in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
In Dubai, obviously, the biggest one, in Mexico City, in India, in the US, everywhere there is like this. And there is like this tendency of, and I don't think it's intentional. I think it's just like we are pretty lost as a society of what actually creates us value. And it's the same thing in our homes, in our culture. Like if it's like just having a lot of iPads or a lot of iPhones, does that save us from our loneliness or it's something else? And that's actually the same thing that cities, like being smart, and that's where everyone is looking, like it's being a smart city, maybe it's not, or a smart person. I don't know if you want to be with a smart person all your life. Maybe you want to be with a emotional someone is like emotionally intelligent, or someone who is like clever. Even we're clever cities. We don't need smart people and smart cities that much. We need that cities that respond to context, that respond to people, that are actually growing and making their places great and their city great all the time, and responding to context. And this is Corley, Jane Jacobs in the sense, or mm-hmm. Lefebvre. It's like everyone should be able to be themselves in the city, and that's power and empowerment, and that's giving that room for democracy and freedom and purely liberty of people just to be themselves in the city. And that's the construction of public space, that's going and having the capacity to sell, live, enjoy, breathe, relax, play in the city. And that's what it's missing. And it's not about things, it's not about having a lot of stuff, it's about having the good objectives and the good stuff to make things happen. And that in my mind is like placemaking. And that's what Mexico City makes it like amazing. You know, Mexico yeah. City is like a city that's always evolving. It's like changing all the time. It has its issues, obviously, as a global city and as a city, like a global south city. But besides that, it's like, it's a great place to be yourself.
I think the thing for Mexico City is when I was younger, I always wanted to go there, and then you'd read about it and people would be like, oh no, like it's a bit of a dangerous city. Like that's not a place you go to. And then it's like 9 years since I first went to Mexico City. I was like, oh my God, this place is amazing. And it's, I mean, it's in the wrong way, but it's like kind of normal. Like it's not like people like sort of made out this, it's this place that's almost like dangerous and a bit too overwhelming to go to. And then you get there and it's like, it's just a big city. But it's a big city with great things in it. It's like a great place to explore, and I've barely scratched the surface of it when I've been there. But I just found that it's one of those places that's almost like shocking, that you sort of go there and it's not overwhelming in the sense of all the things that people might have said about it, albeit that was a while ago. But it's this place that sort of, it's welcoming, it's friendly, there's lots to see, and it feels culturally, it's got a heart and a soul and a grit to it that is like personally the thing to me that really attracts me to cities. And I'm like, I think it's a place where like not like one of the reasons I put it on my list of like these are the cities that I think we actually need to look to as challenges, is because I'm sure you admit nothing in Mexico City is perfect. Lots of things are sort of like a bit wonky, but they work. And I really appreciate places that have that kind of imperfect mentality, but they seem to be much more progressive.
Mexico City is—it's a very old city, and mm-hmm. it's a land that has been inhabited by thousands of years by us, by people, and it has been changing dramatically in almost every century. There is like a twist to the city, and there's always a movement and a change from pre-Hispanic times to then new Spain as a country, and then Mexico as a country, and then now with the globalization, it has been changing a lot. And that is a fantastic way of seeing Mexico as a moving monster around people. But also what I think is key is that it leaves room for anyone to be themselves. It allows people to explore whoever they are, and that's a great freedom in a city. And that's why a lot of people feel very welcome when they come.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there is like a lot of core issues of a 22 million city with a very weak government. And this is like, and then the free market and the developers and everyone like just speculating around land. So that's what makes it very challenging as a city. I read your blog about the great cities, and it's exactly that. It's like you can be just eating a taco stand of less than $1 a taco, and then you can be down the lobby where the tacos are, and then you can go up in the high rise 50 floors up and have a taco of 20. So you can live those two experiences. Like, yeah. And what is great is that both, like, you can do it, everyone can do it, but not maybe visitors that come to the city, but not everyone in the city has that capacity to do those two things. So it leaves room to that. So that's what I love the city. Also, this room for innovation and the capacity of reinventing itself all the time. I think that's great. And I see people coming here, going and coming, that reinvent themselves. And also something great is the underrated. Like, and this is like a something for everyone. We all want to have a brand, and we are building brands and city branding and building like great, potentially great infrastructure and a landmark. And everyone's going to see this landmark of your city. But when you go there, you realize that it's just a picture, and it just takes 10 seconds of your time to do that picture. But besides that, there is not much to see around. And I was just in Toronto, and you know, like the CN Tower is huge. It's like amazing. But what's going on around that area? Are there great cafes? Is there a great place to be? It's not really, right? So what keeps you to be there? Or the Eiffel Tower, like, it's amazing. But then just a picture, it's a moment, and it's super expensive. You know, yeah. It's beautiful, and I love it. But besides that, do that really create the city, or it's more about everything else? And I think that's happened with Mexico City. Maybe when you go to a big global city like Paris, you are expecting to, you know, to meet people and to it's the love city to, so, yeah. You know, like to connect with someone maybe, and then nothing happened. And then maybe you, it's like this, and Mexico City is the opposite. It's an underrated city in the sense that obviously, and I would say Mexico City, but I will also say Mexico as a country, you know, and it's partly because maybe we are too close to the US and it's the only thing they can see. They don't see normally American people outside their own, but when they see a little bit outside, it's about Canadians and Mexicans, you know, like our closest circle of sight. So maybe that global, yeah, that US power, global power of culture and music and movies, and obviously that affects a lot of the perspective of Mexico, right? So when they come here, and I have seen dozens of American friends that say, I didn't realize Mexico City is so big. You can be yourself. There's other people like me. There is a lot of cafes, food, everything. So it's like, it's like this underrated. So in the core, it's like, let's create cities that do not over expectation of our stuff, but being authentic and unique. And I think when you arrive to a city that is not pretending that much, and it's like a person, when it's not pretending that much to be someone, it's himself, is when it's become great. And that could become a friend. And I think Mexico City is a city that you told me, it looks friendly, it's more friendly than maybe another, even like Dubai or, you know, or Abu Dhabi, like how friendly that city can be.
I feel like you have that. There's a personality of cities, and then Mexico City has this personality of becoming very comfortable in its own skin, but also not being. It doesn't feel inferior to other places. It feels like there's this ability to go, like, hang on, we're growing increasingly wealthy. We're learning how to do some things better, but we learn how to do them by trying them. And if we try them and we get things wrong, we'll improve on it later and do it better. And I think a lot of the like Western cities, especially like American, Canadian, British, I think some Western European are like this, but they have this fear of trying something new in case they get it wrong and then people get upset. Whereas I feel like there's a confidence and a swagger to Mexican cities when it comes to, okay, we've been here for hundreds or thousands of years. We actually have a much more rich culture than people give us credit for. But we've got to play some catch up, and the only way we catch up in certain ways is by trying things. And it's not by copying other people, albeit we probably will copy some things. But it's that fear of not being wrong that I think really makes it stand out. I'm curious for your take on like living through it.
I mean, I completely agree with you. Like, it's about not only being smart. I will start with this. Not being smart, not only being a smart city, like the concept of it. Mexico potentially is not a very smart city. It's have a lot of mistakes on being, it's not smart. Definitely, if you put it on that category, it's not smart.
Depends on your definition of smart. Is your definition of smart like digital and being able to measure everything? Or is your definition of smart trying stuff?
But I think that's clever. That's a clever city. But it definitely, Mexico City is not an arrogant city. And what happens with arrogant cities is that they actually underperform their expectations. And I think it's not about being the other hand, being just not trying and not trying to be the best. I think this city tries with a lot of ideas. It has copy-paste a lot of great ideas that have worked globally. Some of them have not actually delivered as they were expected, including BTRs, gondolas in transportation, landmarks, building a landmark that means nothing, building brands. Like, it has been copying some strategies that other cities have done. Being a bike city, Mexico City, it's like a super bike city. You know, you come and it has changed 10 years ago. You come here and everyone is biking. Mm-hmm. There's bike lanes everywhere. There's like an amazing, and just because of the scale of the city, but there's a huge ride share system. Mm-hmm. There is like amazing. But I think what makes this city unique and what's make it great, it's food and how accessible food is to everyone. And it's about like every corner, there is potentially a good restaurant and a great taco stand. And there is food for everyone. And there's like this capacity of changing and evolving and moving. And now there's regulations coming and they want to make them cleaner and safer for people to eat in the street. And I think that's great. But also they evolve and they move and they change. And there's like, you know, I just saw an amazing Japanese guy just moving to the city to open a ramen place in Mexico. And he's like just opening. I think he's opening just today, July 2nd. You know, so it's about that capacity of reinventing himself and potentially this guy who cook amazing ramen and knows about ramen and knows about, you know, in Japan, the thick noodles are now, it's like what's like in famous now. So he's opening his noodle place here. He got a spot in the street. He's opening his street vending restaurant. So that capacity of doing that, I think it's very unique. And also, together with the global south and the connection with the global north and the north, because kind of acts Mexico as a global south city, but it's pretty close to the north. It's in the north hemisphere and it's like close, we call it south, but it's actually more northern than many cities that you can consider north. So yeah, so I think that's a fantastic part of this city. And yeah, I invite everyone to come here and enjoy.
I think the cycling thing is like fascinating. So when I first went to Mexico City 9 years ago, it was New Year's Day and I had a bit of a hangover. But I was with my then girlfriend and I had an engagement ring in my pocket in a box that was like a little bit too big to fit in my like trouser pocket. And the hotel we were staying at had bicycles you could rent. So we went for like a bike ride around Mexico City. And I think that when we set off, we're like, are we insane trying to ride a bicycle around here? And it was like, the infrastructure was, I think most people would look at it and go, it's imperfect, but it was better than not having it. And then you saw, like, we saw old women riding bicycles. We saw kids riding bicycles. We got lost. We definitely ended up in a neighborhood that looked a little bit like rough around the edges. And I'm like, they're going, I've got an engagement ring in my pocket. This is like, but we had this amazing day and eventually got to the point of like, right, I can now ask the question. And she said, yes. So that kind of helped everything. But like, I have that really fond memory of going around Mexico City on a bicycle, not really knowing where I'm going, like figuring it out as we went and then till finally finding the place where I'm like, right, I can ask the question here. But like, that's the sort of the progression. I'm sure if I went back now, I'd be stunned by the transformation 9 years on. But again, you can be in that place and be like, oh, I'm hungry. I'm going to have a taco here and it'll cost me $1 and it's the best taco I've had in years. I really appreciate that place where it's like, the people who are selling that taco have the ability to experiment and like have a place to vend and have a place to sort of create their little spot of the city. And then that's what leaves like the magical memory to people who were coming as a visitor, but that's what creates the heart and the soul to some person who lives there. And to me, that's like the difference between cities that have lost their way because they try and plan their way to perfection, whether that's through you can or can't have a street food stand here, or this is how we do or don't do a bicycle lane. And I think that's the, to me, that's the difference of those like global South cities, is it's an attitude of we're going to go do things.
Yeah. And in comparison to what you said about like potentially developed cities in the North, where, this capacity of reinventing itself, it stopped. And it creates a lot of problems like loneliness,
mm-hmm.
and selfishness on the attitude of not only about like the city itself, but also in the different scales of public space, and then cities, and then friendships, and then actually getting actually to know each other and to reinvent each other. And that's like really threatening to our global way of which cities we want to build on. Do we want to live on a beautiful, perfect home, like a high-tech, you know, house that actually it's sterile, that do not leave room for anything to be changed, and being impersonal and being very, very technologically advanced, but maybe not necessarily human on its core. But also, I don't believe it's like a dichotomy between we need that or we need in the other hand, we need you know, like, let's just improvise and live in a comuna somewhere, mm-hmm. and like just like explore the nature and being like, I think there's like a synthesis of those two things where we can actually be able to have good infrastructure, good stuff, great public spaces, but also room for innovation and community and self-aware of where you are and just being yourself. And I think that's a big challenge of democracy, of global democracy, that how can we actually continue improving our institutions and our infrastructure around our cities, but also continue giving power to innovation, to change, to newcomers, to people that arrive to our cities. And I think that's the, and in our world where we live right now, where migration and foreigners and people with different skin colors, different accents are not well welcome, mm-hmm. it's like very challenging. But when you, and even in Mexico City, you know, there's like this movement against these digital nomads that come to the city. When this city has been built by migrants, as many others, like any other city is built by migration. They came first from Europe, from like 500 years ago, and then they came from the city towns, and now maybe they're coming from other places in the world because it's a great global city, because it leaves room for innovation. But also there's inequality happening, and then maybe, you know, like who can pay a $8 coffee in Mexico City? So then it's like it becomes a niche, you know, and that great spot, that great park, that great area, maybe is not anymore for everyone. So it's this capacity of reinventing also, but leaving room to innovation. I'm happy that you can have a, you know, what's famous now, like a tonic espresso, you know, in every corner, but also you can have a tacos de canasta. So it leaves room to it. So that's great. And I don't see it like so bad that this is happening. Just, I think we need to be careful not to fully allowing the taking of whatever is happening in the city.
There's this sort of thing of, so a Mexican friend of mine in Canada is looking to move back to Mexico just now, and staying with his current employer, moving back to Mexico, he's kind of a little bit surprised to find he can get paid more in Mexico than he gets paid in Canada, which is fantastic for Mexico. It's very bad for Canada. But there's something around that. You talk about the like, there is a huge amount of inequality, but you can still have that democratizing moment of the businessman can be having a taco from a cheap stand on the street that does amazing food alongside a blue collar worker. I wonder what happens where if you push that too hard without being conscious about it, you then create bits of the city that exclude other people who might not necessarily, either it's like, I earn too much money, I would never go over there, or I can't afford to go and have a cup of coffee there. I think that's a really interesting problem.
I think it needs to be, and that's policy making, and that's also should be very intentional, should be also taken care of. And it's not, and I see this both sides, you know, people say, you know, like we have thousands of markets in Mexico, formal and informal markets. Like it means like in a building, or it's just like street markets. Like that happens. I have a study about street markets in Mexico City, and especially in the most populated area of Mexico, it's called Iztapalapa, where we speak about thousands of markets and how actually they evolve and actually how formalized they are. Like you say, it's informal because it's not a building, but actually there's a system where they move, and there's like leaders, and there's a cleaning system. So it's actually unique, and it's fascinating to learn about that. And we have a network called the Market City Network. About it's a global network and a part of it, but, and Mexico City is like a great example of it. So that's a market city as a system. But what I want to say about all the markets is that also we need to be very conscious about who's controlling and getting power around the market or the city or the streets. Because sometimes it feels like it could be, and people are angry about it. Like, it's too much. I cannot walk in the sidewalks anymore. They took over the sidewalk right now, and then someone with a wheelchair, elderly children, early childhood cannot walk on that sidewalk. So where is the balance between those two things? Or I'm very concerned about health, and so. Are they washing their veggies correctly? Are they looking for the for you know like maybe everything fried kills everything, but like still you need to take care about like all the food. So there's that capacity of understanding that we need some regulations and rules to make things safer for everyone, but also where we leave the room is. But it's not about just deleting everything. Like let's take everything out and let's build a market. That's this is the classic solution from decades. Okay, so we have a lot of people in the street selling food, so let's build a market. We put everyone inside, but actually the market inside is not doing that well, that the people outside. So it's about not understanding the dynamic and the capacity of change. Because someone, if you open a sta if you open a street stand, you're a purely entrepreneur on your work, and if something don't work that well, you can change it very fast. But if you invest on a restaurant, then it takes years of planning, of permits, of construction, of menu design, and maybe your changes are not that fast as the one in the streets. So, and how community you are and how close to people you are. We're now having a program in our office here in Mexico, in Placemaking Mexico, that supports, it's part of a global initiative. It's called Backing International Small Restaurants. So we support independent restaurants in the city with community work. So they can spend $10,000 in community, improving their restaurant, but also improving their community. So it's about how can we actually connect those silos places to community around where they are. So it's about just creating this momentum. So that's our city, and Mexico City is like just fascinating. Like you can obviously, I will always invite people that come here to eat Mexican food all the time, because there's like Mexican food is not like something that like it's not like what like and this happened a lot in outside Mexico. The Mexican food is like regional food also. So you if you and this is an advice to everyone like listening in Canada or in the US or in Europe. If you go to a Mexican restaurant that sells carnitas and but also sell enchiladas, I will say like get away from there or real it's maybe it's not a authentic Mexican place, like but there's hundreds of different specialties around food in Mexico, so it's a great place to be and to visit and just to enjoy yourselves, but also room for innovation. And there's this Japanese guy I told you about the ramen. There's another one that had opened his sushi. It's like a high-end, almost Michelin star sushi place, but he used a lot of local ingredients for cooking, and that's great. Like he takes the technique and the local ingredients and creates its own. And that innovation maybe is not allowed in other contexts. And I think that's the capacity of this city to be great. And this is that's the big learning from Mexico City to other cities.
You that example of the sushi, but like applying Mexican ingredients to a Japanese kind of culinary style. I love that as the to me that's the example of like the Challenger City. There's also as when you talk about the markets, it's the when you have a market that's been sort of organized over a long period of time and it can be informal, you have that no one has to go, this goes there, this goes here, this has to be perfectly planned. But it's kind of been perfectly what they end up creating for themselves might look a little bit haphazard from the outside. But actually, it's been experimented and iterated on over a long period of time. And it then means when something slightly weird happens, they can be more responsible to something slightly weird happening. And that's something slightly weird happening might be like tourists stumbling through and not knowing the system. And you see this a lot in markets of people go, someone from one stall is selling the item because the guy who owns the other stall has gone to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And he's negotiating with a customer to like, so this is like a trust factor of how do I make this work effectively?
Yeah.
They look after each other, they have each other's back, and you don't have to say, oh, I'm going to be gone for 20 minutes. Can you like look after my stall? You don't have to put a close sign up. It's that everybody's kind of got each other's back. And I think that's something that's been lost in a lot of more developed cities.
I'm working on this concept, and I've been developing like some. I developed a short documentary about this, but it's called like cookbook for cities. So a cookbook, you know, nice. Like, yeah. And I just imagine like people taking a Gordon Ramsay book, and just have the recipe in one side. There's a beautiful picture of the dish, you know, of the beef Wellington is just a beautiful taken, and then in the other side there is like it comes the ingredients, and then it comes the method, you know, like how to cook it, you know, like you need to do this first step, second step, third step. It looks like people in cities just look at the picture of the dish, you know, and they don't take in consideration the ingredients or the method. And then maybe we finish with cities that look like cookbooks only by pictures. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this happening everywhere. Everywhere looks kind of like, you know, like these guys went to this new urban firm in Copenhagen and copy-paste what they did, or in San Francisco, or in Curitiba, there's an amazing idea. So let's copy it. And they just copy this part of the recipe. You know, but everyone will agree with me in this. Like, if you just copy the picture, the taste might not be as good as the one Gordon intended to have for everyone. So, for cities, in my perspective, it's about technique, and that's what we should copy and what we should learn. But maybe our local ingredients are even more important to deliver an amazing dish, and maybe whoever. Learn from the technique, because it's like a beef Wellington is a complex technique of cooking and temperature and folding and this and that. So it's a very complex. But if you learn that and you take your local ingredients, maybe you will create something even way tastier than a bland English dish, you know? But the technique is fantastic. So yeah, and that's where that's the innovation of the cities. And that's exactly the same thing that could happen with our cities. Like, we could learn from our techniques, our mistakes, our processes, take our own local stuff, and then create something, things amazing, you know?
There's something really nice to that cookbook analogy of you have the big aspirational, this is the beautiful food you're going to make. And then you have the author of the cookbook kind of saying, these are the ingredients I use, this is the method I follow because it works for me. And if you're looking at that as like, I've never made a beef Wellington before, follow the fucking recipe. But if I have made a beef Wellington a few times, or if I've made that recipe a few times, then I might be able to say, you know what? I actually like a little bit more mustard in there. I'm going to throw that in because it's more to my taste or to the context or for who I'm cooking for. And I think that's the thing that cities don't, they get to the point where they think that this is the way to do this thing. And actually, it might be right, but there can be four or five other right answers of how you do it. And sometimes you don't know until you've done it. You might follow the recipe you've always followed, and for some reason it comes out a bit soggy and the pastry's not quite right. It's the same thing. Like, I think that's a recipe book isn't a perfect method. It's more sort of, here's tried and tested things and here's principles you can apply, but also use your brain, use your own local knowledge to make it work.
Yeah. I mean, see, like how many space needles there are, you know? How many cities with space needles there are? I mean, I believe Toronto is the nicest one, but like besides that, people in Seattle might disagree, but like, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's like going to back to the cookbook, it's like you want to impress your first date cooking a beef Wellington and maybe look beautiful in the picture but it tastes bad. Or you cook something, or maybe you follow the rules, you use your local ingredients, you do something tasty, might not look beautiful on the cover of the, you know, on the Instagram
Yeah.
Page. And that's Mexico City, I think. That's Mexico City. It might not look so beautiful in the picture, you know? Even it has beautiful colors and ingredients, but like, what is this mess around here? But maybe like it creates its own rules. It follows some other rules. It's also used their local ingredients to create a city. And that I think is even more unique and tastier and nicer and more innovative and more creative than just copy pasting our solution. So it's about, and this is the planning process, you know, it's way harder, you know, it's way harder in our city planning process to innovate, to read the instructions, to understand why it worked there, see our local context and then solve a problem and then create something great. That is even more complex than, you know, like just copy pasting. Oh, and this happens to hundreds of politicians, you know, like I need to before starting my term, I will go and visit the best cities in the world. I will go to Copenhagen, Barcelona, New York City, Tokyo, and I will learn from them. And I will come back and replicate what's great from there. That's the biggest mistake, because they just go and copy paste the pictures. Yeah. I remember one very specific, because I was studying in Copenhagen, and a mayor of Mexico City, of a district in Mexico City, that actually was a clever guy, you know, like he was a clever guy. He went to Copenhagen. And someone teach him this beautiful, you know, the Copenhagen, you've been there, you told me you've been
there
like
last
so,
week, yeah.
Last week, right? So there's this beautiful cemetery where Hans Christian Andersen, it's there, you know? And there was a study that said that there's not enough green places in Copenhagen for people. And someone say, okay, I think I saw a map and say, okay, what is this huge, big green spot? Oh, no, that's a cemetery. That's scary. We are Nordic. We are scared of it's not like Mexicans, you know, like we celebrate Day of the Dead. No, we are scared of the dead. Nobody was were going to go and run on that park because it's scary. It's dirty. It's bad. There's dead people, you know, like who want to go and run in dead people? If you go right now, it's one of the most active public spaces in the city. Especially in summer, every time, you know, every day. But like, especially in summer, it's so active. People don't care about the graveyard there, you know, like run. So this mayor came and saw how wonderful example that was. And he said, let's open all cemeteries for people to do hiking. Well, okay, man, like it's not about copying the solution. It's about understanding that there is the capacity of building public spaces, great places from everywhere. It's not about opening cemeteries for people to run and to have hiking in cemeteries. That's not the solution of it. It's about looking at the capacities that the city could offer and then open those and creating great public spaces. If it's a cemetery, fantastic. And maybe another cemetery. And long story short, he opened the cemetery, didn't work, you know?
Yeah.
Didn't work. And I said, look, but why? If Mexicans celebrate dead and they like to run also and they need parks, but they didn't understand the core of the solution of it. So this is the cookbook analogy, but also I see politicians mistakenly and doing it. And yeah.
The context, like it's sort of funny you mentioned it. I literally walked past there last Thursday, so I know exactly what you mean. But is that context of it? Someone I'm going to interview, we actually want to talk about what's the cemetery or the graveyard of the future. But like, if you look around, there's cities in the world that have those graveyards that are, some of them are just a place where people go, like locals go for a walk. Some of them are where people, like tourists, go and do pilgrimages. Some of it's where like local families like grieve for a loved one, whatever it might be. And some of it's just where people go for a run. But like, I think that like, that's the, you can't treat all those places with the same mindset of like, this solves the functional need of this is where we bury people, as the example. I think that's like, the sort of getting out that mindset.
It's like your son will not become, like Albert Einstein if you buy him 20 iPads and a lot of computers. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
It's and also that's the same, like, a cemetery in somewhere in another city will not become as great as Norebro neighborhood cemetery just because it opens and it copy pastes the solution. So it's about just being, and we started with also with this, but it's about stop being arrogant about solutions and about expertise. We need experts to bring technical solutions and to solve problems, but let's also take a step down and understand that maybe we don't know anything, or we don't know everything, and a solution might come, just pop up, and will be created by others and the people that is actually the users of the place. So I will take, always I say, like, I would love to speak with that person and just introduce me to him, but like, it's like, I would really take in consideration, like, what happened in Copenhagen, including bikes, street, bicycles, and this park we spoke about might not work everywhere if we don't understand the context, we don't understand the ingredients, and we don't understand the technique and why it happened in that specific moment. And if we learn those two things, maybe we can, that city where they are want to implement something will be even unique and amazing. And, you know, it's like, I'm great. So
there's this thing you touched on around, again, that recipe thing, but there's lots of cities around the world that, like the Michelin Guide, we'll go to them and they'll give a star. I think it's become trendy, but they'll go and give a star to like a taco stand or a noodle stand or a tiny little restaurant that actually doesn't cost a lot of money. And they're not just looking to go and award fancy fine dining places that cost several hundred dollars a head. But I think people get meaning, people get enjoyment, people get satisfaction from those things that feel authentic. At the same time, though, you have large companies and a corporate establishment that's kind of going, we need to provide millennials with authenticity, but then they manufacture their version of authenticity. And I love the phrase that you used before we hit record, but we talked about place making and then you talked about place taking. I'm really interested in like your experience of that, because we surely have to make large corporate organizations feel a part of this world, but we have to do it in the right way. How do you go about that?
You know, like there's this Michelin taco place called El Califa de Leon, and it's like really, really small taqueria that it's close to a big political party office in the city, like the national headquarters of the political party. And politicians from that building used to go to that taco stand because it was great. Even an ex-presidential candidate of Mexico, who so now is a senator and I really admire a lot, he used to go there, you know? And I used to go there with my mom because there was a doctor close to there. And actually, I went 1 week before the Michelin star was given to that restaurant. There was people, you know, it was always crowded, but you could actually, you didn't need to line up, you know, you didn't need to speak. The taco guy didn't need to speak English to give you a taco, you know? So then this, you know, this star was given, and I even spoke with my mom, like, you know, this place is over for us, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, we will never go there. I will never do it because it's a good taco. It's a great taco. It's the best taco maybe of the city, but a taco that I need to stand for 20, 30, 40, 45 minutes, 2 hours to get a taco, that's not a good taco for me anymore. Yeah. You know, a good taco for me is like, I'm hungry right now. I go down the street and I take a great taco. And that's, if it feels well cooked with great ingredients and fantastically delivered, that's the best taco for me. So for me, that place lost because, and it's not the fault of the Michelin guy. It's because always we try to look for, you know, who's, let's never go to, Michelin is such an evil. No, they are responding, as you said, to the context and what people is looking for. And they're definitely looking for authenticity. And generations are, from millennials now, it's about looking for identity and staking. And then let's go because I want to be I want to really experiment how actually local people do it. But at the end, it's not, you know, at the end, that's not the way, actually. Maybe it happened in the past, but that's not the great taco place. It's not the great. I was also in Thailand some last year, like 2 years ago, and I went to also to this place, and it was like, this is not, this all, like 90% here is like gringos, you know, like, where's, I don't want to bother. I want to go to the one even in the other block, you know, that might be like the same, you know, like the same with tacos, you know? So my advice is never like, take so much or take and give, you know, if you come to visit a city, take, but also give, respect where you are, but also, and that's place keeping, you know, like keep, let's keep what we have, but also make and transform yourself and innovate and, but not only in this consumist consumerism perspective, but also on what am I going to give now to the city? What I'm going to actually respect? You know, like I see hundreds of Americans walking at 1 a.m. at 12:30 a.m. looking for restaurants to be open. And they're complaining, oh, this restaurant is open very late because I'm very hungry. Guys, Mexican people have big breakfast, small lunch, and very small dinners. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's the opposite. So have a big breakfast. Understand how things work here. Don't try to change them as if you came as an expert, comes and built a city and try to transform it. And it happens dystopian places like, you know, like in the Middle East or in Southeast Asia, that you know that there's actually no soul, no democracy. People are lonely, people are sad, people are not constructing their own identity because they are lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I invite everyone again to Mexico City to reinvent themselves and to be themselves. And from Frida Kahlo, you know, to Leon Trotsky, to potentially the new Leon Trotsky that are walking around the city, this is the place to be. And to my Mexican fellows, I understand the inequality part of what's happening, you know, because unfortunately we have become also a global city.
Mm-hmm.
And this global city implies also a lot of gentrification and inequality and displacement. Basically, not necessarily gentrification as it's a core term, but like displacement or not the idea of displacement because they are being displaced, but the idea that they could never afford to be there even. Mm-hmm. And they feel displaced, but it's not about them, they're being kicked out. It's about they have never been able to arrive to be in the center of the city or in the best spot of the city because of the global movement of digital nomads and post-pandemic movement is taking over some of the great, of the best apartments, of the best restaurants, of the best spots. But let's not fight that as if it was just like the fault of the guys looking for their tonic espresso. It's this global, you know, like big loneliness and isolation and incapacity of our world to create great places where we are. So they obviously they come here and they love it and they stay here and they found themselves, they found a partner, they found their passion, and that's great of the cities, and all cities should be able to do that.
I think the tonic espresso is such a fascinating news. There's always a symbol of the moment. It was the avocado toast for a long time. As soon as you saw places advertising that, you were like, oh no. But now like the tonic espresso has become it's like the warning symbol of gentrification and internationalization of a city, I think. But at the same time, I'm like, why can't somebody who's from the wrong side of the tracks and who's like trying to make their way in the world, why can't they have a tonic espresso? So I think it's like one of those like warning symbols of like, how do you make sure that all these things are available, but you're not excluding people who right now don't necessarily have the means or are still trying to work their way up in the world? Or how do you bring more people up in the world? And I think Mexican cities are fascinating to look at that because like last year when I was in Oaxaca and I was in Merida, you saw this thing of, there's a little bit of a, we can see we're creating a problem for ourselves here, but the problem that we're creating for ourselves is also a symbol of we're doing really well. And I think it's an interesting tension. I don't quite know how to rationalize it, but I think people like you are doing great things to sort of bring that together.
I try not to, maybe it's that's I'm arriving closer to 40, but like maybe I'm trying to be more, you know, synthesizing problems and, you know, like not taking so easily sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's about like, you know, like, you know, every, like restaurants here are mainly owned by Mexicans. And those are the guys who are actually reinventing themselves. And how actually can we work on that, build local ownership on their places, but also respond to this great demand of foreigners coming to the city and creating this dynamic that is actually constructive for both of them. They're not just extracting, they're just coming to extract, place like we call it place taking, like take from the place and leave, but also give, make, reinvent, transform. And that's a dynamic that needs to be pretty much intentional on looking at the dynamics that are not constructive, but also the ones that are constructive, like just push them to be better. And obviously things have changed, you know. I remember my grandma told me, like, she comes from a middle class family. She used to live as a kid. She's 94 now. She used to be as a kid with his family in a house in the city center of Mexico, no? Like, where now it's like full of, there's no one, almost no one living there. Like, she had chickens in the city center of Mexico. And she told me, like, when I was a kid, my grandfather brought like 48 avocados, like in a box, you know, and they did a big guacamole, and we were having that for appetizers before for lunch. And I told her, like, doing that thing right now, even in Mexico City, that's for very expensive. Like, that would be very expensive, you know. That's like, I cannot imagine. I don't know. I've seen the prices in Europe or in Canada, you know, yeah, you know, like, that would be like insane to do it just like for a middle class family. Things change. There is evolution. Food control of food of local ingredients have been changed a lot dramatically on how we eat, how we cook. Obviously, there's McDonald's and Starbucks in every corner of my city. That's okay, maybe yes, because or maybe no, but like also, where is the room for the others? You know, to be.
Yeah.
I don't want to just take a side. It's just I just want to be pragmatic enough to continue building and creating our cities and to be even every time better. And I want to find the beef Wellington of Mexico City, you know, and that's the signature dish of I think that's, I don't know what you think, but that's the signature dish basically of the United Kingdom. So yeah. Let's find our own. I mean, we have our own, like we have our tacos, but let's find our own that is actually stronger and nicer and greater and fantastic and respond to our context. That might take time. That might take some iterations. It will not be someone that comes and gives us the solution, but that will come through iterations and understanding where we come and where we're going.
I think you've led this really nicely into the question I always end these interviews on is, if I gave you a magic wand and you might use it on Mexico City, you might use it on another Mexican city, you might use it on taking the best of Mexico to other places, what would you do with your magic wand if you could suspend belief or reality to go make better cities?
So what I will do, this is like maybe because I study political science and then I study urban planning, and it's like I'm like a urban political, like, you know, like I love like these regulations and how it works. So what I will do is, there is like, you know, and I will use another analogy, like really fast. Like, you know, when you go out to a party, when you are a teenager, you know, there's two ways to confront your parents on that. And there's a party where, you know, there's going to be some drinks, you know, and so it's like, That mom, can I go to the party? You're asking permission, you know. Or you are telling them, mom and dad, yes, I will go to the party. I will have two drinks. I will not drive drunk. I will come back. I will not make, I will not do pregnant. I will not have sex and have pregnant with my girlfriend. You know, I will use a condom. I will be a responsible citizen, you know, a responsible person. The other side is like, you have no permission, you know, you cannot go there because always your friends are drinking and there's a lot of sickness and whatever, and you don't go. So that's the same that happened with public spaces. Public spaces, if you want to do something in any city, and it's also in Mexico City, people here is like a little bit more, they do stuff, you know? But the control of the public space is on the city. It's like a father, like that figure of father that do not allow people to do things. And you need to ask permissions and a permit, basically. Can I have a permit to do a yoga class? Can I have a permit to... you know, like, I have a permit to fix the street because it's broken. I want to fix my street. Can I have a permit? And it's always about permits. So my magic wand is not about permits, but giving like notifications to the government. So I notify you that I'm going to do a garden in front of my park. And then the notification comes with rules, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You need to use local planters and you don't need to oversaturate. I'm not an expert on gardening, but like you don't need to do this and that, you know? And that's like being a more grown-up citizen, more grown-up community. It implies taking power from your figure government. So that would be my magic one. Like giving more power to the people, less to the government, but the government being responsible enough to create the rules and infrastructure to create these capacities of innovation and leadership. And that would be my magic one, I think globally, but especially in my city, you know, like still there is like this strong fight for control, and I am the owner, and I will say what you want. I will celebrate the World Cup as I think people will celebrate their birthday. You know, it's like a father pushing their birthday to their 17-year-old guy when it's already like, you know, like already in the limit of deciding what he wants. So that would be my wish.
I love that, especially from the context of you spot bits of the city that aren't really going, that could be used better, and then you're empowering someone to go, I can go play with that. I'll let you know what I'm going to do with it. And it's just that balance. I love that. That's a really nice way of putting it. Also, one of those things that it's funny, a lot of the magic wand answers, when you actually play them back going, is that a crazy answer? And it's not a crazy answer. We can do that. So
yeah. Let's do it. Because the magic of placemaking is not about place dreaming. Like I told you, it's not place dreaming. It's not place planning. It's about making. So believe me, our work here in Mexico is about empower. We're doing it slowly. We are not radicals doing it like, you know, like let's go and destroy the institutions and rebuild them. We try to do it slowly. And we have noticed in the last 10 years that it worked. It worked even the power back to people to transform their public spaces and to create their own community. It has made safer cities. That's our big concern in Mexico. Have safer cities in Culiacán. I just had an amazing talk with neighbors of Culiacán. 40 different parks in Culiacán. Culiacán is the city where El Chapo comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine just the big idea of, and it's about giving power to the people. It's about having great public spaces, a community. It's about respecting each other. It's about being themselves. And that power, it will take time, but I think it's a global movement that needs to be imposed by not a rule, but about examples, about seeing how people actually are solving their problems and with less arrogance than many of my dear colleagues, friends from the.
You put it so, like, I'm going to have to get you back because you put it so beautifully. And there's just such a, there's this lovely combination and this like thoughtfulness, training, like a kind of like there's taste coupled with like going and play and like playfulness and experimentation. And I just wish that's the thing that I want in more cities. But I think like you and your work and what's happening in Mexico like really embodies that. Guillermo, you've been brilliant. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. And thank everyone, whoever finished this hour of podcast, thank you for being here and happy to contact them. And if everyone has a problem in my city, you know, because I'm asking for, I say it like it's a positive insurgency.
Yeah.
Whoever have a problem, now I'm in the capacity to bail you out from jail and help you. So please contact me. Whoever finished this podcast, yeah. I arrived till the end.
You'll be surprised how many people do get. Thank you once again for listening all the way through of a lovely hour of chat about cities. As usual, you know, the stuff applies. If you like this, please give it a like, give it a share, leave a comment. If there's people you think we should talk to, do pass them away. If there's topics you'd like us to cover, let us know. And see you again very soon for more episodes. Thank you. Bye.